So many of you learned about 10,000 villages and equal exchange by shopping here at Bethel, right? Maybe you heard about it before that, but I'm wondering what comes to your mind as you think of these two organizations. Some of you immediately thought of Paula Brunk Coons, who was instrumental in getting us started with the annual sales every November and selling coffee in our lobby. I'm going to guess that Kelly McKinnon, Juanita Canzoneri, and many others of you are thinking of the many hours you have given while creating these wonderful events. Or maybe you're thinking about the artisans and the small farmers from impoverished areas who have the chance to make a living through our purchases. Or maybe more specifically, Sue Gillis is reminded that she needs to stop in the lobby and buy a lemon pepper chocolate bar. Or Dave Morn wants to check if I got more Congo coffee in the lobby, or Anakin is texting me for another bag, 5-pound bag of French roast whole bean. I believe that these movements we have partnered with over the years have inspired and educated our congregation. They are global maker-to-market movements that break the cycle of generational poverty and ignites social change. They provide us a way to shop with intention for ethically sourced wares and to share in the joy of empowering artisans in 10,000 villages. Well, as a pioneer of fair trade, 10,000 villages does business differently. They put people and planet first. They are ensuring makers a fair living wage and safe working conditions, and they say, "A conversation is the cornerstone of every purchase we make from an artisan group. Together, we agree on a price that provides vital income, and we deliver advance payments to show resilient enterprises, to grow resilient enterprises that thrive." So Jerry and I met many of the staff with 10,000 Villages in our work with Mennonite Central Committee, and we have been to the main headquarters in Akron, Pennsylvania, many times, and we believe it is a good organization focused on Christ's way. I appreciate their investing in partnerships that empower communities. You know, their average buying relationship with artisan groups is about 25 years. That's enough time to see how the children grow into adulthood and enough time to see the impact this movement has created. And I like the 10,000 Villages focuses on the use of locally sourced, recycled, and renewable materials in their products. They promote creative reuse and energy efficiency in artisan workshops and supply chains to minimize an environmental footprint. It's obvious to us as buyers that 10,000 Villages is educating us of the history of a place and its people. They work together to preserve indigenous legacies while spurring innovation and designs that speak to customers who love craft and culture too. So did you realize that 10,000 Villages began 74 years ago? Everything at 10,000 Villages is fair trade, and the artists themselves get at least half of what you pay for the item. And did you know that Amazon is now selling 10,000 Villages products, and you can receive their products on Prime with no shipping costs? Probably one of my favorite Mennonite women evenings is in November, with the joy we have while unpacking the products and pricing them the night before the sale. These really nice products speak to us as we ooh and ah throughout the evening to each other. Last Sunday, I had a conversation with our neighbor. We were biking home past her house, and she asked where we had biked to, and I said we were at church, and she immediately recalled being at our craft sale some years ago. She went on to describe in detail the two items that she had bought, a tiny nativity scene and a Christmas garland. I found it interesting that I was just working on what to say last week when she said this to me for this morning's outreach and service stories. So I brought a show and tell. I'm sure all of you have products in your homes, maybe, or at least you ate them if you bought some chocolate bars. So now I want to just share a bit about the equal exchange movement, where we buy our coffee, teas, and chocolates from. Started in 2003, the Mennonite Coffee Project, or the MCC, which is Mennonite Central Committee Coffee Project, is a collaboration between Equal Exchange and MCC to involve more Mennonite communities and individuals in supporting small farmers around the world. So through this Coffee Project, you get access to organic, fairly traded products at discount wholesale case prices, ensuring that more of the money you spend on coffee, tea, and chocolate and other products reaches the hardworking farmers who actually grow them. Well, Equal Exchange was established in 1986, and that they buy directly from small-scale farmers' cooperatives that are owned and run by the farmers themselves. Because farmers are paid above market prices for the crops, they're able to make investments in community projects, educational programs, and technical trainings. These cooperative organizations also help keep rural communities healthy and strong and keep local cultures vibrant. Equal Exchange is sourcing now from over 40 small farmer organizations in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the United States, and imports over 5,000 tons of organic food and markets them under their brand. Equal Exchange is also committed to supporting sustainable farming methods that help keep the earth green through reforestation, natural resource conservation, and organic practices. Equal Exchange pioneered the fair trade in the United States, and they're now organizing our network to make positive changes in the food system. Well, what do I mean about that? Well, they have been working on a call to action to legislative representatives because America has a monopoly problem. Consolidation and globalization in the food industry have reached a point where the top four firms in almost every sector have acquired abusive levels of power. This corporate control has allowed the top firms to reap record profits, paying lower prices to the farmers who produce our food and charging higher prices to consumers on the retail side. In the wider food system, Big Food is changing the rules of the game. They control everything from seeds to supply and prices while chipping away at regulations that inform and protect the consumers. It's left the independent food economy, especially farmers, devoid of oxygen. In the name of power and profit, and at the expense of farmers in the U.S. and abroad, corporations count on consumers to remain unorganized and uninformed to maintain the status quo. Well, Equal Exchange supports an independent food system, and they have a letter on their website that we can sign. Collectively, we have power. We can join the fight for an independent food system, one that works for the farmers, consumers, and independent business. I think it's fun that at Equal Exchange, they say, we all walk around like we own the place, and that's because they all do. This co-op has over 130 worker owners, each with an equal stake and an equal vote in the business. They say, we believe that we should expect no less from ourselves and each other than we demand of our farmer partners. And for that reason, they've organized themselves as a democratic worker cooperative, now one of the largest in the country. Equal Exchange works with special grants from the USAID Cooperative Development Program and RSF Social Finance. These grants have helped them increase their yields. You know, as organic industry, the yields might be lower. Well, they have worked on ways to increase that and have actually increased to 106% on an average at four cooperatives in the program, and they work on coffee leaf rust and climate change issues. Well, I hope you've learned some more about these partnerships that we have been working with for the last 10 years. Their products have impacted us. I'm moved to respect and compassion for the goals and achievements in these organizations, and I appreciate the opportunities they provide to us and many people. So please stop by the coffee, tea, and chocolate showcase in the lobby and help yourselves. Let me know if you don't know how to get in there or you need help with buying something.
Good morning. Sorry, we don't have any really pretty show and tell like Jeanette. This request to talk about Family Promise could not have come at a better time. We are in the middle of our 2 weeks, and so this is just perfect to discuss what's going on with the families. COVID has even impacted how the IHN part of Family Promise is being handled. We could not be more grateful for those that have cooked and delivered meals this past week, and the gift cards that will go a long way to help with breakfast, lunch, and items not eligible to use with food stamps.
So Beth L. has helped 10 families this year so far. Six families back in February. We had two families graduate while they were staying with us for 2 weeks in our building. And then, of course, things changed. But we did have two families join us again, and we're able to help a total of six in February. We're helping four today that are staying in the day house, and you'll hear a little bit more about that in a few minutes. We are feeding five adults and five children that are staying in the day house. We've been able to greet them at the doors as we provide the food that all of you have been making and preparing in advance, and they are truly grateful for those meals.
So I mentioned that the church hosting portion of Family Promise has been impacted. There have been no church hostings since the middle of March. The leadership at Family Promise quickly realized changes were necessary as the virus protocols began being implemented across the country. Also, with so many of the church volunteers being seniors and the more susceptible to the virus, they began to make changes. The day house on Tejon is a very small, older Victorian home that had both offices and daytime space for the families. So it underwent some major construction to transition the entire office area upstairs into two bedrooms and a functional bath. The main floor had two bedrooms added, and a quiet room, and they did maintain the smaller sitting room. The families have been staying there since mid-March, and the host churches are doing their part by providing dinner meals Monday through Friday. Since the offices were changed to bedrooms, the staff moved the entire operation to the new low-barrier shelter on South Nevada that was opened in late February. This shelter allows a safe place for parents and their children and is in partnership with the Catholic Charities and City of Colorado Springs. The IHN part of Family Promise, hosting, has several checks and balances for a family to become eligible, while the low barrier shelter does not have those same requirements. The families are given 2 weeks to stabilize and decide if they want to become a part of the IHN hosting program, and they do get to stay a full 30 days at the shelter. There are 17 individual rooms to host families, and of course that is nowhere near enough, but it is a start. With this three-part partnership, Visions for Growth are part of this program.
So in addition to the low barrier shelter and the IHN program that we're all very familiar with, Family Promise is also providing a rental stability program. Basically, they're trying to prevent homelessness before it starts. They're helping to prevent evictions over a 3-month time frame so that families can basically get back on their feet financially and avoid becoming homeless. All the families that have been a part of this program have done very well and have been grateful to be able to stay in their homes.
We're not sure if you as a church are aware of how much Family Promise appreciates us. We always get very high marks for our hosting program and the meals provided. Some of the hosting churches do not have showers or reliable Wi-Fi. Barb Doherty's quilt group gifted us with beautiful quilts for each bed we make, so our rooms look more natural and comfortable. Being on the main floor is also a big deal, since some churches put them in a windowless basement. They even have windows they can see outside and a lovely playground for all the children. So, church, as a whole, congratulate yourselves for the forward thinking to provide a great space for those homeless parents and their children.
And we do look forward to the pandemic changing a bit so that we can begin to host families here again. So it seems like there is often greater need than services can provide to those that are in need, like these homeless families in Colorado Springs. And Family Promise has done their best to provide additional services to fill that gap. We've mentioned the low barrier shelter that helps up to 17 additional families. We know that those families may not be ready to enter IHN yet, or may be on a waiting list. They've added the rental assistance program to prevent homelessness in the first place. And of course, they're helping four families at a time through IHN. But still, the need is greater than this. So years ago, Family Promise began to dream. And they had a dream to be able to double the number of churches that participate in IHN and basically allow two rotations of four families each, or eight families being helped at a time. So in response to this dream this coming year, a committee is being formed to basically care for the existing churches that are helping IHN today, and to begin the process of expanding the number of churches involved in IHN. It's a lot of work to be done and a big dream to be able to double the number of churches involved. By the way, Denver has already accomplished this. They are actually helping eight families at a time today. So Beth has agreed to participate on this committee and to begin that good work of doubling the number of churches involved. So please add this effort to your long-term prayer list. And if you're interested in helping with this effort, please reach out to Beth or Family Promise directly. Thank you.
Thank you.
So most of you, when you drove in today, or biked in, or walked in, drove past a alive, growing community. I don't know if you can guess what it is. The community garden out there, Ranch Community Garden, is a growing community. It's been a part of the grounds for quite a while. I think we're in our ninth growing season. And it was mainly founded on a question, and that question was, how can we be more involved in our community? And so with that question, Pikes Peak Urban Gardens initially got involved and kind of helped jumpstart what you see today. There was Lauren Collier and Mike Martin were part of that initial committee, but in starting the garden, I probably met more people in the community in the first month than I had in the previous 10 years here at Bethel. So it's definitely been an eye-opening experience for me, and just in terms of meeting people in our community. So what is the garden? I don't know how many people have actually been in the garden, but it's 122 plots, 4x6 plots, that are, or 4x8 actually, raised beds, and people can reserve a plot for $20 per year is what it takes. So it's a self-sustaining ministry. And we have 16 plots that raise food for Mercy's Gate Food Bank. Anybody in the community can be involved. It's actually a great cross-section of our community. There's people from different churches, different backgrounds that participate in the community garden. There we have a large composting area back there. So we everybody in the community garden brings their food scraps. All of you actually could bring your food scraps if you wanted to and deposit it in the composting beds back there. And we turn that into dirt and actually turn it into food for people. So one of the stories in terms of how community can kind of change people's perceptions is before this church was built, there was there were several people who were against the rezoning of the church property, and one of these was very outspoken. And in the process of building the community garden, this person actually became a champion for the community garden and ended up having several plots in the community garden and being a part of that. And I think it's just a great example of how being active in our community can change people's perceptions and become part more integrated into, you know, who we are and what we're doing. This fall, I'm going to be doing a planting garlic demonstration. So if you guys are interested in growing garlic, be on the lookout for that. And there's always an open invitation to help. Terry Webb is on the board, and she does mainly the volunteer food bank beds in terms of coordinating those. Brian Miller is also on the board with me. And it's just a great living example of our involvement in the community and how we can continue to be involved. Thanks.